Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, May 23rd, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. It looks like Sitka's Parks and Recreation Manager will keep her job. A half-time employee at the customer service counter in City Hall can also tear up a pink slip. The Sitka Assembly last night worked through next year's municipal budget and made some tough cuts, but existing personnel were not among them. Proposed funding cuts for the library, the museum, and the Sitka Convention and Visitors Bureau were also restored. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
City Parks and Rec Manager Lynn Brandon has fans, and they turned out to lobby the Assembly to continue to fund her position. Assembly members maintain that the decision whether or not to fund the job was not at all personal. Members of the public who testified, however, thought Brandon's loss would cost Sitka more than the Assembly realized.
I'm Hans von Rakowski, the chairman of the Parks and Recreation Committee, and I've come before you before to support this position. And Lynn has brought in over $3 million in grants for the program.
I'm John Stein, and I support adding back in the manager's position for Parks and Rec. I just think it's a specialized area, and we've done really well with that position in place.
Mary Stevenson, when you take a person as qualified as she, who's put in a lot of hours and knows a lot of things that are in the pipeline to be done, and then to totally yank her out July 1st, she's bringing the intelligence, the expertise of her position, and it's a big void should she be gone.
This was about the full extent of public testimony over the course of 3 hours of deliberation on the budget. The Assembly convened in a special meeting before its regular meeting, but spent much of that time trying to figure out how to tackle the list of 28 proposed cuts, Assemblymember Mike Reif.
And I think the worst part of our job when we look at this decrement list is there's real people attached to each one of these positions. I have to look at you in the face if I decide to vote against funding this.
Tor Christensen suggested moving the decision about the Parks and Rec manager to the bottom of the list, and the rest of the Assembly agreed. But by that time, the one-hour special meeting was over with no formal action, and it would take another 2 hours of regular Assembly business to get back to the budget. In this second round, things move faster. Taking the list of the administrator's cuts or decrements, the Assembly restored funding for summer groundskeepers at $56,000. They put back a $264,000 cost of living adjustment for all city staff. They returned over $43,000 to the Sitka Convention and Visitors Bureau. Tor Christensen advocated for the SCVB.
It's anything that's going to increase our tax revenue, that's it. I mean, and frankly, I'd like to see us get much more aggressive towards all types of visitors, you know, not just cruise ships, but, you know, everybody from ecotourism to charter boats.
The Assembly also restored $20,000 cut from the Sitka Historical Museum. Mayor Cheryl Westover said the Historical Society and the Visitors Bureau work together as an economic engine and their own little enterprise group. The Assembly also put back $26,000 cut from the library. Christensen said Kettleson was probably the single most popular thing in the city. Assemblymember Mim McConnell, who also heads up the nonprofit Easter Group, saw the library in a different light.
You know, we don't have a homeless shelter in town, and the library is kind of our surrogate homeless shelter. It's a safe place for people to hang out, so the longer hours we can have there, the better.
Phyllis Hackett observed that it wasn't only the homeless who sought shelter in the library. Cruise visitors were so frequent, she thought the city should use state head tax monies to support the facility. Hackett also argued for restoring $32,000 cut from the city's annual appropriation to nonprofits. Eventually, the Assembly got back to the two proposed layoffs, the Parks and Rec manager and a half-time customer service representative in the finance department. Finance Director Jay Sweeney said the loss of the employee, who was just hired earlier this spring, would be bearable, but it would mean reducing hours at the city's customer service counter to noon to 3 p.m. weekdays. The Assembly thought that was poor service and restored $25,000 for the position. Parks and Rec Manager Lynn Brandon spoke on her own behalf when asked if she planned to push for new park infrastructure or to maintain what Sitka already has. Brandon said she had collaborated with TrailWorks to spend $800,000 in state transportation funding to continue upgrades to the Cross Trail. She said the department was not in a growth mode.
My main mission for the next year is to try to get money to rehabilitate our playgrounds, which are very substandard. Once again, another safety issue for the city and borough. So we are trying to create a system of sustainable and safe park areas.
The assembly put funding for Brandon's job back on the list at a total cost of $94,000. In order to meet budget deadlines, the assembly will hold a special meeting next Tuesday to hear this amended budget on first reading and to consider two proposed sales tax ordinances that have been repeatedly postponed until now, the end of the senior sales tax exemption and an increase in the $1,000 sales tax cap. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Climate change seems to be a subject of debate everywhere but the Arctic. This spring, veteran APRN reporter Joanna Urich traveled across the state talking to Alaska Natives and scientists about changes in weather patterns that have moved from theory to reality. Part one of this five-part series begins in Cook Inlet, where there's evidence to suggest that warmer temperatures are increasing the prevalence of PSP, or paralytic shellfish poisoning.
Alaska Natives say when the tide goes out, the table is set. In Cook Inlet, it isn't just natives out on the beaches. Many in south-central Alaska head to Clam Gulch each summer. One of those out there with her shovel and bucket is Mary Lou Butteroth, a Kenaitse tribal member.
I eat them raw. I mean, when I'm on the beach, I have to have at least five. I just rinse them off in that skizzy water. And
but how safe are those razor clams? Mary Lou has never gotten sick, but anyone eating untested shellfish is taking a risk. Razor clams are relatively safe, but butter clams are the worst. They can hold PSP toxins up to 2 years. Cooking shellfish doesn't guard against PSP, though it reduces concerns about some marine toxins. More than 10 years ago, natives down the coast on Kodiak Island noticed that paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP, was increasing. It was happening more often in places it hadn't before, and even in the winter when shellfish used to be safe. It wasn't just a little tingling in the mouth, either. Clams seemed more toxic. More people were getting sick. A Kodiak elder asked Bruce Wright, a biologist, for answers, but he didn't have any.
It's real quiet, and all the other elders are looking at him, and he goes, "For a scientist, you sure don't know very much, do you?" So I promised him I'd try.
The state only tests commercially grown shellfish. A decade later, he was working down the coast for the Aleutian Pribilof Islands in a region where people relied on clams, and some had died eating toxic ones. He and Ray Rolon with the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program tested clams throughout the state for a year. They trained people from the southern tip of Alaska to the islands on the Russian side of the Aleutian chain and north to the Pribilof Islands in the Bering Sea to prepare samples and put the word out on PSP, more commonly known as red tide. One of those trained was Desiree Roll, an Aleut in King Cove.
Prior to this project, it was like Russian roulette. We would wait for our neighbors to go eat the clams, and then if they were good, we'd go get our clams. Somebody had to be first.
That testing program resulted in the first and only statewide baseline on PSP in Alaska. It helped educate people in many communities about the risk of PSP, but it did not answer most of the questions asked by that Kodiak native more than a decade ago about why there seemed to be more problems with toxic clams.
Is there evidence that it's climate related? The problem that we have, particularly up here where we're at, is that we don't have enough data.
Ray Rolon with the Marine Advisory Program says with no data on what Alaska's shellfish was like in the past, it's hard to say if toxic levels are changing and why. Studies also indicate that most people who do get sick from eating shellfish don't bother to get tested. Toxic algae blooms increase with warmer ocean conditions and increased rainfall in calm waters. That much seems to be associated with climate. Rolon says that other marine toxins, which are a problem down south, will probably move north as conditions change. In 2004, a warm year, cruise ship passengers got sick eating oysters grown in Prince William Sound. It was Vibrio parahemolyticus, a toxic bacteria, something Rolon thought would never be a problem in Alaska's cold waters.
We had a record warm summer. One farm that was implicated in Prince William Sound had water that was 20 degrees centigrade. You could swim in it.
The 2004 outbreak was the third worst Vibrio event in the U.S. Roland and his team went to work and found a way to keep commercial oyster farms out of hot water.
You just drop your gear for a few weeks, and it doesn't take very long.
The state put a Vibrio prevention program in place. That, along with existing PSP testing requirements, assures the safety of Alaska's commercially grown oysters. In the Aleutians, the network Wright and Roland helped create continues to monitor clamming beaches and educate local residents about PSP. The state's also starting a pilot program for community monitoring. Those efforts may help increase the safety of clamming, which remains a risky business. I'm Johanna Urich.
In part two of this story, Urich examines how an unexplained outbreak of disease among seals may be linked to warming weather. Active duty military personnel and their families will get free admission to Alaska State Museums this summer. The Alaska State Museum in Juneau and Sheldon Jackson Museum in Sitka are among more than 1,500 museums nationwide and 8 in Alaska, extending the offer as part of the Blue Star Museums Initiative. This is the third year the museums in Juneau and Sitka are participating. The program begins May 29th and ends September 2nd. And that's all for Raven News. Here's a quick look at Sitka zone weather. Today will be mostly cloudy with scattered showers, highs around 53, light winds becoming west, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight will be cloudy, scattered showers, lows around 45, west wind 10 to 15 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Thursday will be mostly cloudy, highs around 55, northwest wind up to 10 miles per hour, increasing to 10 to 15 miles per hour in the afternoon. KCAW, Sitka.